Hi, welcome to Real Talk, Black Minds Matter. I'm Andrea Brown, your host. Along with me today is our co-host, Nia Jones, the one and only. So thank you for joining us today. We know you've heard this subject over and over again, the 411 on the 50. Yep, and it's us. We're gonna talk about that again today. And I know oftentimes you're like, not again, but it bears repeating. Based on what we see every day in urban cities, every day. And what about what doesn't make the news? We gotta talk about that. And so let me just open us up a little bit and then we're gonna have some good dialogue. And this will be one of probably maybe even a three-part series because we have guests, we will bring guests on to talk about what that really means, the 411, and what should we be doing as a Black community. So we're gonna talk about that today. But the Black community really has experienced widespread social unrest. You've seen it, and it hasn't just happened. It happens every week. There's some new thing, and which is widely believed to be the result of lethal police violence directed at the Black community by racist cops, racist policies, and I, quite frankly, I'll go even further to say, really, by what's going on in the White House. I think the head of the House sets the tone. That's what I believe. And it has been clear, and it's been evidence in these last couple of years, these last months, and even more recent as this week, that we have authorities who refuse to denounce white supremacy. And I think when you do that, what you say is, it's okay to keep doing what you, to keep lynching Black people, Black kids. Well, that's exactly what you're saying. You're saying it's okay to lynch my Black 16-year-old. And so what we're saying today is we're going to call you out. And we're going to talk about the 411. We're going to talk about the naked truth about the police. We're going to talk about it. And let's just, I don't want you to think we're going to spend all our time police bashing. Because this really isn't about that. But what it is about is the honest truth about systemic racism and modern day lynchings. And I know you're saying, Andre, there's no lynchings going on. That's not true. Ask Breonna Taylor. Ask George Floyd. Did he call for his mother? That wasn't a modern day lynching? And come on, and then we started at the onset talking about those that we never hear about. And so we're gonna talk about that today. And so I know this is a difficult subject. We don't wanna hear it again and again. It is a difficult subject. Matter of fact, I hear police sirens now, where they headed now? And so we're gonna talk about that. But before we get into this debate, and wherever you find yourself on this, you know, is it us? Is it them? Is it, you know, are we in the wrong place at the wrong time? They're just protecting themselves. I do want to salute the brothers and sisters who wear blue, who put on a badge every morning and risk their lives to keep communities safe. But they do it with integrity and they do it with truth. And so thank you for your service. But for those of you who have another agenda, and that is to bring genocide to a whole group of people, we are calling you out today. And we're gonna do it unapologetically. And so just know that. But I this is, before I open it up and Leah and I have this dialogue, I do wanna say, you know, the criminal justice system has failed us. It really has. It has failed to protect Breonna. It failed to protect George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery. I mean, and the list goes on. But today we'll talk about that. And, you know, again, we can talk about how it doesn't, this, where we find ourselves in this moment, isn't about the police department alone or about policing. But it is, it does speak to a larger systemic problem. But in the meantime, until we get what we need, how do we keep our families safe? How do we keep us safe by a routine stop that could cost me my life? And I don't want us to think, because you got initials behind your name, Nia, and as I and countless others, that that is a protector for us. They don't care that it's PhD, MA, MD, LCS, MSW. No, they don't care about those initials. And so we're going to talk about it. And I don't know what it feels like to be the most cussed and discussed right now, and I don't care. I really don't. What I do care about is how do we protect a nation of brilliance, a community of brilliance from being brutalized and lynched? And so, welcome. So I'm gonna turn it over to you, I think. And I think we should, you know, I think what will make this, I think what makes this at the heart of the matter for us is that we have the privilege and blessing of being mothers to Black boys. Me, a Black teenager, and you, a little Black young boy.
7 or 7 years.
Yes, sir, him. And so I want my son to always know the truth about, you know, about the what's behind the badge. But I also want to protect. I want to protect him so that he can get home safe.
Yeah. So my young Black boy is 7, and I vividly remember him, you know, saying, "When I grow up, I will be a police officer."
Wow.
And have a conversation in preschool about the police. And right down the street, so he was in Towson, his preschool was in Druid Hill, and if you know anything about that, those neighborhoods look completely different. And a colleague, her grandson was at the preschool in Druid Hill, and their conversation about police was completely different. My son wanted to be a police officer. Her grandson said, "The police killed me," because that was his wow. reality in zip code 21217. And so it was important to me in that moment to start to have the conversation, but I thought I had more time. I think he was like 4 when that happened. Fast forward to this past summer, he wanted to have a water gun fight, and I'm like, "You can't do that in the park. You can't play with the water gun in the back of Daddy's truck, right?" Like, and he's like, "I don't understand." And continuing to have that kind of conversation with a 7-year-old who developmentally, he's a kid. And so you start to have the talk, I think, earlier and earlier now for Black mothers. But I would, you know, I think we can start with the kind of 10 rules of survival.
Yeah.
If it's not by the police.
Yeah. But you said something that just, as you were talking, I was hearing you, you know, about the police kill you. And I think we should start there. But I do want to say, you know, there's the theme about I can't breathe, obviously, because that's what George Floyd said. But, you know, I think if you ask me, and you didn't, but I feel like you want to know anyway, if you ask me what would be my, like, a theme, my message, I can't sleep. So I can't sleep because this 16-year-old, that my husband and I probably don't, we need to talk to more about that, but I can't sleep. I mean, the thought, like, and we live in a decent neighborhood, if there's such a thing, because it happens anywhere. But I can't sleep just thinking about what lies ahead. And I really want to sleep. And I don't know that that's gonna happen for me. And we're starting to look at colleges, and I'm like, not in that town. But what does, you know, but it doesn't matter. He's a Black boy in any town. So maybe as you talk about these 10, maybe I can find some, and maybe our listeners as well can find, you know, one of them or more that resonates with them. So.
Or it might not.
Yes, it might not.
So let's see, number one, and these were crafted by our good friend David Miller.
Yes, yes, a friend of the Black Mental Health Alliance.
Black Mental Health Alliance, yes. Is there to be a King Project. And so number one is to be polite and respectful when stopped by the police. Keep your mouth closed.
It's interesting because I know as adults, that's difficult for us.
Yeah.
So can you imagine, you know, I wonder what a parent says to a young who has just gotten his license or her license. And, you know, they think they're invincible anyway. And it's funny, you're talking about, you know, having the talk with your son. I think we have to start that early because they don't know to keep their mouth closed. Because here's the other thing, we are telling them, express yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. So it's interesting about keep your mouth closed.
Keep your mouth closed. And for teens, developmentally, there's this complex of not, I am invincible. Nothing bad is going to happen to me. That is teenagers, regardless of color, where they live, that is a part of their development. And so
you can tell me as a practitioner, you can tell, right? Okay, good. All right, you can tell. I knew she was going to slide something in about that.
And so I don't think anything bad is going to happen. And so I am going to, you know, if I was raised to speak my mind and, you know, I'm in this situation, is nothing feels dangerous because I'm a teenager. And so developmentally, that just may be difficult. Number two, remember that your goal is to get home safely. And if you feel your rights have been violated, you and your parents have the right to file a formal complaint with your local police jurisdiction. And if you are over 18, you have the right to file a formal complaint.
I like David's piece about get home safely. Mm-hmm. Just say, because there's something, that's almost like a call to action.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Get home safely. So if my son is out at the movies and he's driving, or even if he's not, he's with some friends or we dropped him off and we're going to pick him up. At the end of the day, I just want you to come back home safely. That's a call to action. And I think if we keep saying that over and over to them, mm-hmm. I think, that it resonates. Like that resonates with me. Get home safely. Get home safely. Because it now becomes, I got to get home safely.
Yeah.
I do. I love that.
Yeah, I remember when I started driving, my mother would always be at the front door when I pulled up. And I had a little pizza car. but I was like, why are you always there when I pulled up? And she's like, I wanted to make sure that you were home safely. And it didn't matter what time it was. She wasn't resting.
No.
Similar to you. Yeah. Anytime I was out and driving. Number three, don't under any circumstance get into an argument with the police.
Okay. What about if he calls me? See, I totally get it. And this is the only thing I'm going to say, and I'm going to let you get through the rest. I didn't realize we were just at three. Do you think white parents say that to tell their kids don't know that?
No. Absolutely not. That is not a conversation that they have.
Okay. All right.
Number four, always remember that anything you say or do can be used against you in court. Number five.
Can I say something?
Sure.
If you like it, she goes again. But when you just said something about about anything you say or do. I want to talk about the or do. Mm. Because, you know, a few years ago, a movie came out and it was a true story. It was based on a true story and it's called The Hate U Give. And Khalil, when they got stopped by the police, he went to reach for his brush. And, you know, I can't even, 1,000 things, I don't know what was going through his mind. But I know his friend that was with him said, don't, because they had the talk. And so it is important when we talk about the do, what not to do. And I should know all of these names. And, you know, just recently a case where the gentleman was at his son's birthday party. And was, you know, he wasn't stopped. I don't believe he was stopped, but same kind of thing. Watch what you do. I think he started moving away. And, you know, I want us to pause on that about what we do.
Yeah.
You know, like now I have even, I am like frantic about my wallet. So my wallet is black and it's long, right? It has a zipper and I'm nervous about even, so I'm about to change out my wallet because when you look at my wallet, if I reach for it just to get my stuff, I'm telling you, I have had angst over this for the past few weeks. I was like, I gotta buy a new wallet, either a short wallet, but it's long, I'll show it to you. And so even reaching for that, what I do. So, and I don't know if David talks about maybe having my license handy or a copy of it handy. I don't know. And maybe if I let you finish, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, but that's anxiety producing, right? Like, no other race has to think about a wallet that's black. That, like, does it look like it's going to be a weapon? That is...
It is, I'm telling you, on us to be black in America. This is America, and this is what she has reduced us to, mm-hmm. you know? And so when I hear people, or I see stuff when people say, you know, make America, or make America great again, what's interesting about that, America was never great. She's always been selfish. She's, you know, she's always been selfish. She's always been brutal to her own. And so let's make America.
Right? Let's make it a promise.
Yeah, let's do that. You made us a promise. Now let's make you keep it.
That's right. Number five. And this kind of speaks to your early point, but keeping your hands in plain sight and make sure that the police can see your hands at all times. So similar to Khalil in The Hate U Give, he reaches down for a brush and Star.
Star, that's right.
The main character in the book and in the movie mm-hmm. Tells him about in that moment about the talk and keeping your hands in plain sight. Some people say go as far as to putting your hands out of the window.
Wow.
To show that you absolutely have nothing. Number six, avoid physical contact with the police, no sudden movements, and keep hands out of your pockets. Number seven, do not run even if you are afraid of the police. Number eight, even if you believe that you are innocent, do not resist arrest. Nine, don't make any statements about the incident until you are able to meet with a lawyer or a public defender. And number 10, stay calm and remain in control. Watch your words, body language, and emotions.
So that's loaded, number 10.
Yeah.
The minute you see the lights behind you is immediate angst.
Yeah.
Right, that's right. Immediate. And so, you know, it makes perfect sense, but how do we do that? And I guess what I want to say to you is, you know, I guess really I want to ask you, you know, as a mental health professional, right? You know, a routine traffic stop, and all we see those, how they turn deadly for us,
yep.
Not for them, but for us. And so how do I navigate these murky waters? I mean, how do I navigate, you know, I like being able to stay calm. Hell, I can't even sleep. You're telling me to stay calm,
right.
You know? So can we, let's have that conversation. What do I do? Because I know, I also know, if I can get through this with, you know, with very little scathing, then I know that will help me long term. But I don't know what that is. I don't know how to stay calm.
I don't know how to stay calm when a car is behind me and they have a bike rack on top of it. And I
wow.
think that it's the police, right?
Like, wow.
Immediately my heart starts beating faster, right? So let's think about that. Like, even the shape of what might be police lights sends you into almost a panic attack. And so I think that, you know, these 10 rules are helpful as a start, but the human body is wired for emotion.
Wow.
Okay. And so I'm not sure how you stay calm. Maybe, you know, I teach clients a technique called grounding all the time as it relates to trauma. It's pretty traumatic, right? So I would say, you know, activating that grounding skill. So grounding is when you bring yourself into the present moment and you're able to calm yourself down. And it can be a variety of things, like your word is cereal and you have to name every brand of cereal that you know. And it can be as kind of deep as, you know, five things that you can see, four things that you can hear, three things that you can touch, two things that you can smell, one thing that you can taste. To be able to kind of ground yourself in that moment, and it keeps you calm because you don't say anything out loud, it's kind of within. That's really the only thing I can think of in this moment that would help you to be able to see how you're feeling and to really check in with yourself. but we are wired for emotion. The thing that I teach clients is, you know, anger is okay, right? Anger is an emotion. You are, you know, I'm a believer, so we are given, God gives us these emotions to explore. The problem comes when you, if your anger turns into aggression, or, you know, if your sadness gets in the way of your daily activities, or you being numb about something causes you to turn to, you know, drugs or drinking. You can't, you know, start your day without it. But the fact that it tells you to really watch your body language and your emotions, it just, I feel two things, right? I feel like I'm hardwired for it as a human, right? I'm human. Number two, I feel like it's some, like, post-traumatic slave stuff going on here. And I'm like knee deep in Dr. Joy DeGruy's book. So
yeah.
She talks in the beginning about how mothers would have to keep their children close. And we would have to always be cognizant of our emotions. And so how many times do we have to keep saying, it goes back to slavery. And the experience of enslaved Africans. And so why do we always have to watch that? Like, why is it that we're always under a microscope and that we have to teach our children, watch your emotions, stay
right,
close, hold
right,
on to my
right,
leg. You right, can't explore mm-hmm. the world like other, you know, white children in this country. And so I get that a little bit as well, but jumps off soapbox.
I like your soapbox. You there. And, you know, you know, it is his. So I see, I think a couple of things. So I think about what we see now on television all the time. Like they replay the tape about Breonna. They replay, you know, and how our children have now become almost desensitized.
Yeah.
But a few years, this has been, you know, without dating myself, it's been years and years ago. We went to visit my cousin who lived in Annapolis. Mm-hmm. And she lived in a housing project, and we knocked on the door. And my brother and I were really, it was around Christmas time, and we knocked hard because we had lots of stuff for them. And I heard, he was then, I mean, he's an adult now, but he was, I guess he was probably about five. He said, "Duck, it's the police."
Mm.
And so I remember that well. And I thought to myself, if they are saying that he's five, and then his little sister who is three, duck is the police. You know, so I think about what we see now on television, and I wonder if I banged on his door today, you know, what would that be like? And so I wonder, how do we protect ourselves and our children from that? You know, because this is our reality. And this is, you know, and this scenario that I talked about or that we see is the norm in urban cities across the country.
Yeah.
So it's the norm. And so I wonder though, you know, to our counterparts, well, not even to our counterparts, I wonder, you know, to our, you know, PhD and doctor brothers and sisters, you know, who live in these suburban neighborhoods, do they really believe that they're exempt from this?
So the interesting thing about that is maybe 2 weeks ago, Kerry Washington was on an interview. Kerry Washington from Scandal and Saved Last Dance and really amazing actress. It lives in Hollywood in a really amazing neighborhood and expressed concern that when she walks in the neighborhood with her children, she gets those kinds of looks. Kerry Washington, who didn't watch Scandal, right?
Right.
And so the fact that she has to kind of wrestle with that same dissonance is disturbing. And so I know that a lot of like psychologists and psychiatrists talk about psychological fortitude. It's really like the equivalent of working out, right? So being able to have those coping skills in place, have those skills such as grounding in place to be able to control the emotional response. But that means that having psychological fortitude acknowledges that those things will come, right? Like, we understand that being Black in America, you're gonna have to process this. You're gonna have to live through this. And the way that we approach it is, it's a reality, and here's how we kind of live within this reality. Still unfair,
but it's been
the best approach.
So I'm glad you raised that. So, you know, you've shared about, you know, sort of how to get home safe, the 10 that David shared. But I'm curious, and we both of us are voracious readers. We love to read. And so she's like, have you heard about this book? Have you heard about that book? And I don't want it on my phone. I love a book in my hand. And so, you know, just like you're reading Dr. Joy DeGruy's book, I'm reading a book by Isabella Williamson, and it's Cast. And it's this, you know, just again, it talks about, you know, where we find ourselves in history, but it's deep and it's almost dark. And so I can't read it all the time. But I want to talk about your thinking about, you know, when we talk about police brutality, I've heard people say it's a public health crisis. Talk to me about, you know, I know if I can't sleep, if I'm not careful and don't get some sleep, that's going to shorten my lifespan. And I really want to be around to love my Black husband and raise my Black son. Okay. So when I think about a public health crisis, I'm thinking, God, it would have to be.
Yeah. A public health crisis is anything that disproportionately impacts certain
women. And there it is. There it is. So we are, in fact, in a public health crisis behind police brutality. So this has been helpful, but I think we know that we've got to do more. We've got to talk to our children, but early and often, and we steal childhood from them, to me, at times. If we got to talk to them, because there's something beautiful and innocent about not having to worry about those things. But we're not at that. And so I think we still, you know, you want to write a book, A Stolen Childhood, ask us. Ooh, we might be on to something. A stolen childhood. But, you know, quite frankly, and so again, I know this is just a small portion of what we will be talking about. We've got other experts that will join us. And we've even got, you know, potentially, we might even have a surprise for you guys about, you know, how people who look like us, who are officers, what does that mean for their families? And do they have the talk with their families? You know, we have, the Black Mental Health Alliance has, and we'll finish up and I'll punt to you, but we have our own chaplain. And one of the things that our chaplain talked about, you know, it was just a heavy moment for us a couple of weeks ago when the police officers, the grand jury came back with the decision not to indict any of the police officers in the Breonna Taylor case. And that was a heavy moment for us. And one of the things that he said to us, he said, you know, not only is that an attack on Black people, he said, but that's an attack on Black women. Mm-hmm. And he said, what he said was, I want you to hear this. He said, you know, I wake up every day, I got a Black wife, right? He said, I had a Black mother who nurtured me, a Black grandmother who taught me, a Black, you know, they have Black hair, Black everywhere, Black. That was cute, right? But he didn't say it like that. Like old MacDonald. No, they have Black hair, Black. But what he said was, you know, that's an assault on the Black woman, the strength of a Black woman. And now, because, you know, we have historically, Black women have historically voted, we took care of your children. I mean, we nursed your children, we couldn't nurse our own. And he said, and so, you know, there's a larger thing at stake here. And so, you know, I hear my white counterparts talk about endangered species. If we don't do a thing, that will happen to us.
Yeah, the thing that sticks out to me the most, at first it was the fact that Breonna Taylor was an EMT. And then I stepped back again and she was asleep. That was an assault on the rest of Black women.
On the right. We're not sleeping anyway.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
She was in the helping profession. She was a public servant.
Black
frontline, essential worker. But she was sleeping. Let's start there. In her own bed. And we already, like, black women will die tired, right? Mr. Richard Rowe, Mr. Black Mental Health Line. Talks about how black women hold up the sky. And, of course, that's tiring, right? Because I'm always
That's right.
But she was asleep. That was an attack on the rest of black women.
Can I just tell you, this is going to have to spill over into another segment because, you know, you raised something that's so powerful to me. And I think about, you know, these great black women. But let's talk about Fannie Lou Hamer, who said, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. But quite frankly, and left here way too early and was tired because of the fight about the vote, because of the fight about oppression, because of the fight. I mean, you know, but the rest of that is, I had not. Just hearing you say that again just is mind-boggling to me.
Yep.
Well, you know, Nia, I'm gonna let you close us out. But I'm glad we will end with that because it really is the 411 on the 50 really is about not just information sharing, not just about getting home safe, but it really is about how to protect ourselves from the attack. Mm-hmm. The attack on the rest of black women.
Yeah.
Told y'all she's something. This one.
Brace yourself.
Yeah, brace yourself. So as we head into what will be the second session or part two of the 411 on the 50. And I think that this is a conversation that is ongoing. I'd love for you to leave us with some parting something.
Oh. What you said, prepared, friend?
She said, I left you with some parting something.
Yeah, I gave my parting words.
She did. You did give me parting words. You did. But that was so good. That was so good. And I'm happy to take it back if you are.
I think that you were right on it, right? So when we think about this being a public health crisis, and in that moment, kind of like, what else do we have to be on the top of the list or the bottom of the list for in order for us to get justice? And then how long do we have to keep asking for it? And it is... Check on your black friends, y'all. They tired. They are in a constant state of anxiety to be black in America. Mm-hmm. They are in a constant state of depression and rage to be black in America. All of these things, including police brutality and just consistent fear and trauma and re-traumatization, whether it's CNN, MSNBC, or Facebook, or your own dinner table, it is consistently traumatizing to have to live through this, but that's the key. We live through it.
And so thank you for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed it. And we really, you know, check us out. We'll do a Facebook Live, but check us out on our sites, many of the sites which we will give to folk. But again, it is, I like that. Check on one another. And then, always, always have the talk and have it over and over again. Thank you for joining us tonight.